the sound of a chipmunk making the monk sound, monking, as John Latimer would say.
Monking around.
Monking around. Now, I had heard that sound before, but I had not realized it was a chipmunk making it. And so when, you know, I think a couple years ago when John mentioned, oh yeah, the chipmunks are monking around, I went on iNaturalist and searched around the sounds until I could find it. And I was like, oh, I do hear that noise. I had no idea it was a chipmunk.
Sounds like a bird. A squirrel. Right? Squirrels can sometimes do that too, where I think it's a, like, I'm hearing the noise, I'm using Merlin. I'm like, why aren't you picking it up?
Yep.
Merlin.
Oh, it does the same thing with frogs. Drives me nuts. Oh,
we need frog identification. You are listening to another edition of the Season Watch Pod. Place to come when you're curious about nature, when you want to feel connected to something. And it's so fun to like delve into how things are changing and what's going on outside. That's Charlie Mitchell.
That's Heidi Holton.
And we're monkeying around today, aren't we?
We sure are. It's a good day for it.
Yeah.
I don't know about in Grand Rapids, but here the sun is shining. The oak trees are blazing. It's a good day.
Dang it. We've got no sunshine, cloudy skies, but I'm seeing the river birch yellow, which is very nice here on the banks of the Mississippi.
Very nice.
But some big winds came in and, you know, lost most of the color around our region. So except for those glorious tamaracks.
Oh, I know we don't have many tamaracks around here, but there are a few. Oh.
This is a fun way, you know, if you're hearing this through a podcast or on the radio, we would love it if you help us out. We always need help. And that means, like, we want to know what you're seeing, and we'll be talking to you more about it. We've got new methods to do that at the end of our pod today, but also tell your friends about it and pass it on, post it on social media. It's a great way for all of us to feel a little more connected in an unconnected world.
Absolutely. Connected with nature, but also with each other. That's the wonderful thing about this network of people, seasoned scouts.
Yeah. Nature nerds.
Outdoorsy dorks.
Yeah,
all of us.
I like it. So let's stick with the chipmunks. We had a little bit on it on this week's report from our liege, John Latimer.
Sometime this past week, the last of the chipmunks disappeared from my yard. Maybe you still have an active chipmunk, but keep an eye out. They're going to disappear. They're going to not disappear. They're just going to go down in the ground and live off of all of those sunflower seeds that they spent the summer stealing from your bird feeder. So they'll be fine, and they'll be back in late March. About the time the robins come back, we'll start to see our chipmunks again.
So while we were talking about that, we heard from Bill from Wabana, who said, chipmunk just ran across my deck. So they're not right on exactly on time, right?
Well, it depends on the chipmunk. John has mentioned in the spring that his chipmunks tend to come out later than other ones, and he thinks it's because it's in a relatively shady area. But I don't know. Phenology is all local, as we know.
And it's really interesting because now temps are cooler at night. We are starting to feel some of the real changes. We've got daylight saving coming up this weekend. You know, we all want to be a little cozier and do our winter things. And that's what the outdoors is doing right now.
They sure are. Yeah. The key to surviving winter isn't just staying warm and packing on a lot of fat. It's also saving energy. It's just not doing much. And our chipmunks are pretty impressive at that job. There's an article that I was reading a couple of years ago, and John was talking about chipmunks, and I was writing a story for KAXE. It's a scientific article in Ecophysiology Journal titled "The Energetics of Autumn Mast Hoarding in Eastern Chipmunks." In mast years, like this year was a mast year for oaks where they just overproduce acorns. And the idea is to produce so many acorns that there's no way that all of the chipmunks and the squirrels are going to eat them all. There are going to be some that are forgotten or roll away and grow into new oak trees. And so in these like hyper-productive acorn years, let's see, during the peak hoarding period, they can gather enough food to last them all winter in 1 or 2 days of harvesting acorns.
They're hoarders.
Isn't that wild?
Yeah.
So 1 or 2 days of work all winter they're fed.
Okay, so unlike birds, they're not moving geographically, but what exactly are chipmunks doing?
So they're heading underground. They aren't true hibernators, like you might think of a woodchuck. A woodchuck is going to be basically unconscious all winter. They will not move. They will not wake up. Chipmunks are more, they go through torpor, which is another kind of deep sleep. Their heart rate slows down, their metabolism slows down, but a few times every winter they will wake up. They will go visit their hoarded food. They will stuff their little chipmunk faces with all of the acorns that they've saved up and then go back to sleep. So all of their energy isn't necessarily stored as fat in their body, the way that a woodchuck might be, but it's stored in those acorns in their underground cache.
They're not interacting with each other. So there's not, I don't need to anthropomorphize this of like a children's book where they've got a whole city underneath the ground and all that stuff, huh?
I would really love to think that's true. It's not true to my knowledge. But the thing about underground, we know very little. You know, you think about how we know less about the deep ocean than we do about outer space.
Sure.
There's also this entire world underground that we are just beginning to discover.
Did you ever read Mrs. Frisbee and the Rats of Nim?
No, but now I want to.
That is, I read it as a child, and that there, I went through a phase like the cricket in Times Square, kind of where the animals have, lives. And Mrs. Frisbee and the Rats of Nim was like that. There was a whole world, the rats living beneath, and, governments. And I mean, just super, super fun. I'm going to kind of think that there's something else going on, since we don't exactly know what they're doing down there. But we do know, as we see them collecting those acorns, they're planning ahead.
They sure are. In the same paper, they like radio tracked them to their little dens. You know, you can store up enough food in 1 or 2 days for an entire winter. You can store up enough for 2 winters. Some of them did do that, and they will like these chipmunks will gather all this food during the good years, store it all underground. In spring, they pop out, do a little mating, do a little springtime run around, and then if they've got plenty of food in storage and the food out there isn't so good, they'll just go back underground in like August, wall themselves in, and I mean, there's no point running around, maybe getting eaten by a predator, gathering not as much food as there was last year. You can just go back to sleep for another winter. And like, I don't know, I always had in my head the idea of like chipmunks being these always on the edge of starvation, like always out there foraging. We've learned that living in nature is always a struggle. And that's not always true. It's a boom and bust cycle, and as long as you take advantage of the boom cycle, you can just take a nap for 2 years.
They're planning ahead. I like this. It's sort of like in COVID when everybody's buying out all the toilet paper, I mean, that you're planning ahead. You got to plan what you're doing for a winter, I could probably take some note from that. And I'm going to look at this is kind of, gotten me more curious about like whether I'm gonna see if we have any chipmunks around. I know exactly where they are and at our house, and they like to bug the cat if she's outside. But I'm gonna kind of look at them a little bit differently.
See what they're up to.
So okay, so let's get into some of the curiosity part of this season watch pod. We had so many great reports coming from schools this week, but one that stood out to us, tell us about it a little bit, or this group of people.
Yeah, this one is from Little Falls. The teacher there is Chad Kaditz. He's a middle school science teacher there and has a phenomenal phenology program that's been going on much longer than he's been involved with us. If you ever get the chance, please do check out his illustrations on our website. Each year, each week, he sends in their report along with the phenology topics that he
Yeah.
draws out on the blackboard. They're just incredible. But
And
yeah, his students. Oh, go ahead.
they have a great Instagram page too.
Yes, they do. Instagram, and their handle is little_falls_phenology.
Okay.
Definitely would recommend.
Well, let's find out what they were curious about this week.
This is Brody
And Emma.
reporting from Little Falls Middle School. This is our phenology report for the week of October 26th.
We had sightings of flying squirrels and skunks. Most have been searching for food around our homes.
Speaking of looking for food, a classmate caught a coyote trying to steal their cat food from a feeder.
Spider egg sacs are easy to spot on windows and siding, and on sunny afternoons, we have seen glints of light reflecting off the ballooning spiders as they drift by.
There was a large flock of smaller birds that flew overhead, but they were making a lot of noise, so it was easy to identify them as red-winged blackbirds.
We have had a lot observations of larger mammals this week, including black bears, a bobcat, and a gray wolf.
A student captured multiple images of a piebald deer on his trail camera. The doe looked normal, but had a large white patch on her forehead.
We have been seeing harvestmen and crane flies, which both are sometimes called daddy longlegs.
The fruit of the high bush cranberry is easy to find this time of year, but we were surprised to see that they are still holding most of their leaves.
We have had reports of Canada thistle that was still carrying flowers and a unique sighting of blue violets in bloom.
There was a large group of 50 to 75 crows in a field.
Silver maple leaves have dropped, and the upper branches all have large buds that look like a tree in the springtime.
A student saw a tractor in a field that was hauling corn and noticed five deer that were following and picking up the spilled corn.
That is our report for this week. Until next week,
keep exploring, keep discovering, and keep connecting with the great outdoors.
What a great tagline.
They said it best. So they're talking about some of the things that are changing, and I noticed they're talking a little bit, well, they talked about that coyote, mm-hmm. and then bobcat and a gray wolf. Larger mammals and black bears.
Those black bears are still out there. They're starting to go to bed, but they're definitely still out there. I am eager for them to go to sleep for the winter because I have not had our bird feeder out since early spring because first the black bears and then the raccoons were getting into the seed. I've been without my birds this whole time. It's a rough life.
So we're going to hear from one of our good friends who joins us on KEXE, and hopefully will be on the podcast with us more, Andy Try. He is Dr. Andy Try from the Minnesota DNR, and we had a chance to talk to him this week. He studies bears. He's the project leader, and as he told us, he is the best job in the world.
I mean, I'd argue that I have the best job in the world, but it's hard to argue with getting to play with baby bear cubs.
Yeah.
I mean, do research with.
Oh, sure. Yes. Very serious that Dr. Try is doing.
Mm-hmm.
But they too, I mean, I think everybody, I don't know if it was in all the cartoons where it's like they put the Z's, you know, above their head, like they're just, they're always sleeping. And then at some point I realized people started talking about they're not exactly sleeping.
They're somewhat conscious.
So we're going to listen to a little excerpt of this conversation we had with Andy on the morning show this week, along with John Latimer.
For the last couple of weeks, I've gotten a number of reports of people seeing bears. And I just assumed that most self-respecting bears had long since gone to bed and were going to sleep through this winter. And then I got to wondering, does the fact that we're having warmer falls push the bears a little bit longer to feed more before they're going to sleep? What's the case? What's going on?
Well, let me give you the quintessential biologist definition, which is it depends. it depends how far north you are as to when winter hits, and it depends if you've got little ones in tow or are with cub, you might say. And so what we find is, in general, the pregnant females up in at least the Grand Rapids latitudes and farther north start to den sometime around the first week of October. I think the average date is like October 3rd for the median, so half are before and half are a little after. And then the rest of the females, the ones that had cubs last spring and are denning with what will become yearlings, those den somewhere between 10 to 15 days later on average. And then the boys and the solo females, they are out sometimes even a little later. We'll get reports of bears out and about during hunting season, munching on gut piles and that sort of thing. So, you know, sometimes into the second week of deer season. So it's not uncommon, especially if you're farther south. If you're like in Brainerd or Sandstone or even down on the north end of the cities, those bears will be out a little bit more than our northern bears will be.
And just tell us a little bit about what they're doing prior to finding a place to den up, or, and do they, I mean, I think a lot of people just assume that, you know, all the bears go out and dig a den or dig a cavity that they're going to then crawl into and sleep. But that is not the case, I understand.
That's very much correct. So starting in mid-August, their body flips the switch and they have to eat like the Michael Phelps training diet, 20-some thousand calories a day just to put on enough fat for winter.
And that that's like a biological, like up to that point, they're just happy to go along eating whatever, 4,000 or 6,000 calories, whatever it takes to get through the day. And then starting in August, they are like compelled to go eat more.
Exactly right. Yep. It's presumably we think day length is the main cue because it's very consistent right in the middle of August. That's also when some of the migration starts as well. So we'll have bears from Grand Rapids going up into Canada. We have bears from Grand Rapids going to Brainerd. Brainerd bears going to Lake Winnie, eating out of the dumpster at the resort there. All kinds of movement happens in the fall. And they eat as much as they can. They kind of switch to a more nocturnal feeding schedule as you get later in the year, just so they can, you know, they have daylight's getting shorter and they need to eat a lot of calories. So they feed more into the evenings and the nighttime. And then something will happen where they either are, we don't know the exact mechanism why they do this or how they choose, but if they've migrated, they come home, generally the females. The males will often be like, I think I want a nice, quiet, solitude place to den up, and they'll often go up into the Cooch County Bog from Grand Rapids. And then as they localize, they'll either start digging their den. Bears almost never reuse their dens ever because, you know, if you dig it out of dirt, the top's going to collapse in midsummer. And so they'll dig a new den every year. It'll be in the same general area. But if they're younger or less experienced, or they just have been flooded sometimes, they'll be above ground. And so they'll be in brush piles or out in the cattails or out in the cedar and the tamarack swamps that we have, just like in a mound of sphagnum moss. And they'll stay there all winter long, wind blowing on them, you know. It's a little warmer in a hole in mid-January. Like, it's about 10 or 15 degrees warmer than ambient temperature in that den. But if you think about when you're ice fishing out in March, you know, when it's nice and warm and there's sunshine, it's actually warmer to be above ground than it is below.
Do you think you could sleep on a bed of sphagnum moss?
I mean, it is very soft and cushy, but it does tend to be wet all the time.
Yeah.
And that doesn't sound pleasant to me.
Yeah.
But I'm not a black bear yet. Working on it every day.
So they're in some ways, okay, so John's asking if like that's there's a switch, right, where they start eating more, like Michael Phelps. eat is how Andy was talking about it there. But to me, that switch is almost like they're stress eaters. Like, I gotta get ready for winter here, man. You know, kind of like if stuff's going on in our lives, we might
life depends on it.
We might eat a little more. You know.
Yep. Yep. That can be my excuse for all my midnight snacking.
There you
go. Just living that bear diet.
Exactly.
You know.
Yeah.
Up all night. But I think our North Shore Community School students said something like, in September they only get 3 or 4 hours of sleep a night, and the rest of the time they're just chomping. That is.
So we also talked about, there was the woman that was sending in a question. She's worried about her dog and the eagle, like last week, I think it was.
Yep.
And she's also had this smaller black bear at her house, and she's worried about this adorable puppy that she had. So she had this video from like her Ring camera. Bear is basically knocking on the door.
Yep.
And she's terrified, you know? So we asked Andy about that, and he's like, they're harmless.
Yeah, they're curious. I mean, and that's the thing, especially with young bears. They've got great noses. They're extremely curious. They're extremely intelligent. And if they get that food reward once or twice from being curious and nosing around human areas, they're going to do it more. I know I have certainly committed the cardinal sin of leaving my trash out unmonitored during early spring when those yearling bears are separated from their moms and just trying to survive. And we had a yearling bear who came and knocked over our trash can. My wife saw it and yelled, and it grabbed this trash bag in its teeth like a dog with a stuffed animal and went tearing off. And I did not want the bear to learn the lesson that you get to steal trash bags from humans and everything's fine. And so I went chasing it. They are substantial creatures, and they do deserve respect. But also, black bears are pretty scared of us. And there it was. It was like standing up next to the trash can or next to the trash bag in the middle of the forest, and it stood up to kind of look at me and smell at me and see what I was doing. And I yelled and I yelled and it stood there. And so I got closer and closer, trying to scare it off. And eventually it did. But they are scared of us. Every time I saw that bear afterwards, it did come back two more times.
Okay.
It took me less and less work to scare it off.
Wow. I don't know that I would do that. Like when you're saying you're going after the bear, I don't know that most people would know to do that. Like they're, I think it's trained in us to think, oh my God, run in the house, get away.
And I think that's partially because grizzly bears are extremely different from black bears. And we learn bears as we should. We learn bear safety from grizzly bears because grizzly bears are much more dangerous to humans than black bears. And generally, if you act like a black bear is as dangerous as a grizzly bear, you're better off.
Okay.
But I don't know. I guess I grew up, we have active black bears here in Stillwater. As long as I've been alive, we had black bears up in Ontario that we had to deal with. And so my parents modeled scaring off the bears for me.
Yeah.
I have one notable time that my mom, we had a dog. His name was Muggsy. He was like a golden retriever husky mix. And he had scared a mama bear and her cubs up a tree. Well, the cubs up a tree, mama bear on ground. And I watched my mama bear go outside to get my dog inside with a piece of like turkey or something. Get in between the angry mama bear and my dog,
Oh no.
and herd my dog inside.
Wow.
And again, everything was fine. Black bears can be scared off, but maybe I have not.
You're not recommending this. You're just telling
No.
stories, right?
Yep. Don't call your lawyer.
Okay, so this is really getting me thinking about, all the things that are going on. And I love each week when we talk, there's words that I like a lot or I don't get to use very much. Andy said there one of my favorite little phrase, don't know why, gut pile. Love a gut pile. Love feeding on a gut pile. I mean, we've done that before where, we got a
Have
deer
we?
and then you, not you and I, where we got a deer and then put the trail cam on the gut pile to see who came. And we got some extraordinary photos of eagles and all of this stuff. And or offal, it's also called.
OFFAL,
Yeah.
awful.
Yeah. So that's a favorite phrase of mine for this week and might be a good band name for you this week. Gut pile.
Gut
Pretty
pile? Could be, could be. It
I
would, that'd have to be a really grunge band.
okay. Which you could, I think you could do. But I think, here's another thought of a band name, and maybe it's a little more new agey, experimental, emo, biological antifreeze.
Ooh, yeah. I can get behind that one. Plus involves frogs, which are, my favorites.
Okay,
Well, one of my favorites.
I need help on this one because I was this many years old when I realized what happens to frogs. I never paid attention or was even curious before the last few years about where they go and what they're doing for wintertime.
Yeah, and it differs depending on the frog. It differs. A lot of frogs will just kind of settle down in the mud, at the bottom of a river or lake and ride it out that way. But then we have our land frogs, like the wood frogs, some of our chorus frogs, that have this really cool adaptation to that enables them to essentially freeze solid and reanimate again in the spring. Painted turtles can do this. A lot of our insects can do this. Basically, any of the critters we have here that stay here year round that can't get below frost line, but somehow need to get through this freezing period and go about their lives again in the spring. And so it's a kind of a two-part antifreeze that they use. I try to think of it like, you know, if you put a full water bottle in the freezer,
mm-hmm.
and then ice forms and it expands and then it pops the bottle. Think about all of your cells as little water bottles. And so that is why if we get hypothermia, we get that frostbite so badly, is that our cells are freezing, the water in them is expanding, and it's bursting our cell walls. And that's why you get that horrific damage. And so for all of these frogs and insects and little hatchling painted turtles, they kind of do two different things. The first thing is they dehydrate their cells. So in terms of the water bottle in the freezer example, you squeeze it so that it's a little bit deflated and then put it in the freezer. And then even when it freezes, it can expand a little and not pop the bottle. So they dehydrate the interior of their cells just a little bit. And then on the exterior of their cells, they transform a form of glucose. It's like glycol. I'm not going to get the chemistry right, but they essentially make this cool chemical that when the ice crystals do form in their body cavity, not within their cells, but in their body cavity, it prevents the ice crystals from getting like large and pointy. So you have much smaller ice crystals form that aren't going to puncture anything. It's just such a cool and like incredibly intricate way to survive winter.
Yeah.
And it's the reanimation part that fascinates me.
Yeah, because I remember some of our students reporting on frogsicles.
Yeah, frogsicles.
Yeah.
That's what they're called when they're frozen solid, no heartbeat, no breath.
Some other thing is happening then for them to unfreeze and kind of come back to life, although they're not dead while they're frozen.
Yeah. I mean, this is something that, you know, I didn't study, and so I'm certainly no expert, but that is one of the things that just mystifies me, is when you have a frogsicle, no heartbeat, no electrical activity in the brain, no breath. Is that frog alive? But come springtime, it's hopping around. It's making decisions. It's as alive as it can be. It's just nature.
Yeah.
Nature, man. Always up to something.
Well, I would love to hear from other folks if they've witness this, or they too, like me, this is news to them about this biological antifreeze kind of, and how this whole process works.
Or if you know the trigger that, like, once they thaw out, the trigger that restarts their heart, how? Oh, yeah, I would love to learn
how
more about that.
There's the question. We have some new ways for you to get in touch with us that we're trying out. Season Watch Pod is new from KEXC. And we are trying out something that is called SpeakPipe, and you can find a link to it in the description in your podcast and at our website, kxc.org, when you choose to go to the Season Watch Pod. And you can just record there a question, an answer, or maybe like clarify some stuff for us that we might have talked about this week. But we'd love to next week share some of the things that people record for us.
Yeah, please do. Absolutely love to hear from you. I would love to learn more. Please do send in something. We'd be excited to talk about it next week.
We like to end on a sound. And Charlie, what do you got for us this week? What do we want to hear?
This one is the classic chipmunk noise that I do know that it tends to do if it's scared or trying to yell at someone who's coming too close.
The Season Watch Pod is a production of KAXE Student Reports, made possible by the Minnesota Environment and Natural Resources Trust Fund. Thanks to the Bear Guy from the DNR, Andy Try, and our listener members. We thank you. If you want to get more about the curiosity of nature, you can sign up for the Season Watch newsletter or join our Facebook group. Chipmunk sounds this week from iNaturalist users Jay Broberg and Moses Mickelson. And of course, as John Latimer always says, onward and awkward.